Welcome to Opening Voices. Today, Quentin Adams, CEO of CleverCloud, is meeting Steve Morin, CEO and founder of ZML. In this second episode, Quentin Adams discusses with Steve Morin about what training and inference involve from an industrial perspective.
Hello again and welcome to Opening Voices. We are still looking for the tech leaders and explaining the business model of tech and how European tech leaders can move around the future of technology. And today we are still with Steve Morin, the founder and CEO of ZML, which is a Paris-based company working on AI. Last week we discussed about the change fundamentally AI and LLM introduced to the way we use calculation and stuff like that. And we still at the future ZML office. We will not disclose the location. So it's pretty cool.
What's crazy is that, you know, week over week we managed to have the exact same setup.
Yeah,
incredible.
The works here doesn't work fast.
Impressive.
So they freeze the construction work on the office to
the time,
for the
podcast. Stayed like at this very you know specific space for like a week.
And,
you know,
and
waiting
you wash
for you.
Your clothes and everything.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah. So last week we discussed about the kind of change of the calculation. This week we will continue to discuss the point. So basically, what we say is using neural network and LLM is using the kind of calculation we're not used to use this intensively before. And we use a lot of intensive computation and more. The kind of data we use are more heavy. That means that we need to stay them on purpose. What I have heard about AI, and maybe you can correct me on that, is there is difference between when we train the model, we assemble the model and we create it, which is the training, and when we use a model, and which calls the inference. So basically, when OpenAI is creating GPT-5, they are training. When you are using GPT-5, you are using the inference. Can you explain like a little bit the difference between the two procedure inside the system and what's the difference?
Yeah, like roughly speaking, training is essentially an assembly of two phases or two passes. We call it one, we call the forward pass, the other one we call the backward pass. Right? At least not all AI, but you know, bear with me. Training is saying, hey, you are Steve. Or rather, you know, who are you? And you will tell me, you know, I am Steve, and I will tell you, no, you are not, you are Quentin. And maybe, you know, after like 10 times I'll tell you you're Quentin, you will say, ah, okay, Quentin is the guy with the suit. And, you know, you will try and find, you know, why, you know, what's the difference between what you think is the response and what the response should be, right? Which is, you know, why we say that, or at least I say that, you know, in AI, behavior emerges, right? Because in the end, you know, you try and find, you know, why it's Quentin, the response to the question. And so forward pass is asking you the question and you're responding, and backward pass is me telling you, let's measure the difference between, let's say, Steve and Quentin and apply it to the forward pass in reverse, right? And so this is training. So training, you know, we train a model to do a certain thing. That's why, you know, it's a beautiful word, training, right? Inference is when we ask the model to infer a response. So we run only the forward pass. We don't correct it. We don't tell it, you know, what it should be. We just let it, because we think that it has seen enough to infer a response.
Like you have seen a lot of a cup in your life. When I give you a cup, you know it's a cup. You don't need to train to being a cup.
I am GPT-5 level in cups.
Yeah.
Yes.
So in terms of economics of calculations, what is the real difference between a training and inference? Because,
all right,
you know, like when we talk about AI, a lot of people are saying like, this is a nightmare. Data center for AI is so big and stuff and stuff, and. Maybe there we need to explain a little bit the difference between the two phases.
So it's they obey, like, even without economics, they obey for very, very fundamental tectonic forces. In training, you are trying to build one of something, which is, you know, the model, right? So you're trying to, you know, train a model enough so that in the end you get one thing, right? And so in that phase, it's more like, it's a lot comparable to like research, right? You're chasing one goal, one instance of that goal, rather. And in that realm, more is better. You want more data, you want more compute, you want more, you know, more of everything. More is better. So this is training. Because again, you're building one of something, right? On inference, though, this is the complete opposite. You are running the model like billions of times, and you're trying to optimize it. Not so that, you know, it becomes, you know, feasible to train it in the first place, but to operate it in a cheaper manner, to grow your margins. And so very, very different. It's production code, right? So it's not about doing it once, it's about doing it millions of times, right? By the way, in trainings, details don't care. Because training is research. In productions, details are what gets you. Like if something breaks, somebody gets woken up, right?
Yeah.
And have to fix it. And so in that realm, you know, less is better. You are better off with less compute. If you can do some the same thing with less resources, you will absolutely do it with less resources.
So basically what we can say is training can be a kind of a place where we can try new stuff, not be optimized and everything, because it's a one-time stuff.
You try and optimize certain things that in inference are really, you know, not the thing that you may care about.
And so basically when we built the model, you just duplicate it and you can use it for inference.
Yeah.
And so there is few people in a few places in the world that will create model. And so training capacities will be like kind of anomaly. And inference will be, it will be like 99% of the calculation power we need.
Inference?
Yes.
Yes. Well, maybe I'm trying to be conservative, like 95, but yes.
But anyway,
at least an order of magnitude, yeah. More than training.
I have been told that NVIDIA card is something you cannot... not used for the training because they have some particularity in kind of calculation and network between the cards that nobody else have. So for the training phase, they are pretty much the most important stuff there.
It's not really, maybe circumstantial. Like, so if you're talking about InfiniBand or that sort of thing, this is not really true. This is circumstantially true.
Explaining you.
Circumstantially meaning that in the end, you know, the networking, you move that around. So it's just, you know, how big are the pipes? And so, yes, there's a question between, let's say, InfiniBand 900 gigabit and Rocky 400, like 800 gigabit, right? But does it matter? Not so much. What does matter, though, is that, you know, the CUDA ecosystem, which is CUDA is how you program NVIDIA GPUs. So
CUDA is a library built by NVIDIA, like
no. It's the ecosystem to this. Yeah. It's more like of an ecosystem.
Just maybe that the people realize that I think I heard about CUDA for the first time before 2010.
2006.
Yes, it's 2006. Yeah. I would say it's a 20 years old.
Or roughly.
Old, 20
Don't
years
quote me
old.
On this. Yeah. It's been around for a good while. Okay. But it's not a new. At the time, that wasn't a new thing. What was very cool about it was called GPGPU at the time, General Programming GPU. And at the time, what time, what date?
2007.
Close. Not quite, but
close. The first version. That means you have access to something at 2006.
Oh, yeah. I had folks who were doing GPGPU at the time in 2003 or 4.
Right? Yeah, sure.
But the idea is, CUDA is heavily integrated. So if you play into the Ikuda ecosystem, yes, life is good. And on that sense, you know, NVIDIA is far ahead of the curve, but on the, I would say, it's very circumstantial in the sense that, number one, you can absolutely build something out of integrations, right? You don't have to, you know, buy a ready-made thing, right? The question is, like, when you train, you know, how do you do it? And, you know, what do you prioritize? Do I want to really build, you know, a framework or like software infrastructure for training where I can just, you know, use NVIDIA's? But also, you know, on that matter, probably the most mature ecosystem is the one from Google for TPUs. TPUs are far ahead of CUDA.
Maybe we can that scale. We can discuss about the TPUs a little bit later, explaining to the people.
Sure.
Kind of sure.
But this, so, like, essentially, they're like Google GPUs, so to speak, made by Google. But the idea is, so the point is so that it's not really true in the sense that.
So CUDA is built by NVIDIA and fully integrated by NVIDIA, and that's why they have this
by NVIDIA for NVIDIA.
Yes. So once again, software is leading the way.
This is why I say it's circumstantial in this huge hardware discussion
because, you know, right now when people are speaking with our investments in Europe, basically, you see all the people from telcos and hardware and like nearly public works and stuff going on and say, yeah, it's our job. And what I'm trying to explain to the people, like each time we talk about digital stuff, it's a software problem.
No, I mean,
you need to listen to people.
Let's just say, like, there is hardware, absolutely. But in the case of, you know, NVIDIA, it's not the only hardware. And for that matter, it is not the best hardware. There is more powerful hardware available, right?
But there is the best ecosystem from a software point of view.
Exactly. Or let's just say an integration coherency point of view.
And this software is not a project coming from ChatGPT minus 6 months. It's a 20 years old work on how do we do to this kind of calculation. Even before we think it can be used in this kind of situation. Mm-hmm.
But to be clear, that was not something like they invented. This is something they invested on. It was existing before CUDA. Look it up, it was called GPGPU. And prior to it being called GPGPU, it was just like, you know, doing A plus B in a pixel shader, right?
Okay.
So programmability of GPUs, you know, in what was called, used to be called shaders, is a very old thing. It was used mostly for, like, you know, style, lighting, etc. But it was used to essentially apply functions to pixels. That's why GPUs are massively parallel.
I'm smiling because for the people that don't know, that the first company I created was a company of video games, and basically I play a lot with shader.
There you go.
And it's like I remember to the good old time of making play with shader, because shader is a kind of programmatic which is really fun because it's very beautiful. At the end, you can make like the 101 of shader is creating fireworks display. Like, it's basically the tutorial of how to make shaders is, and it's very beautiful actually. It's a mathematical art.
But you know what? It's not a surprise that GPUs were used, you know, very early. I would say in the modern, you know, 2010-ish AI, because a lot of AI was built on recognizing images. And so running what's called convolution, so essentially applying a model to like pieces of an image, again, which plays into the massively parallel, you know, nature of, you know, let's say ingesting pixels.
So basically, there are the time where you train and the time with inference. Mm. And if we're speaking about the AI adoption, that what we just discussed plus a derivative, was how much the importance now is on inference. Mm. And What can we say about inference and the goals? Because we're speaking about building new kind of data centers. And maybe we can have a little bit zoom inside what is a data center and why we speak about power load.
Yeah, we switched to power.
Yeah. Because so for years data center have been basically rented to the users by square meter.
Right.
And now we have a lot of densification of the hardware. Basically, you can have nearly the square meter you want in the data center because the point is power. And the data center have never enough power for all the space.
It has now become the limiting factor, which means this is now what is priced.
I'm still. No, no. It's why it's priced now.
Well, let's just say in the narrative we hear, right?
Yeah. I'm still trying to convince the data center I am in. Like the free spot can be very well used to make a saucisson dry, but they don't want it. But the point is, what is the kind of factor we can describe there so the people can understand the point there?
So, number one, it is impossible to, or at least very inefficient, to think of this whole thing in as a stack of layers. In the sense that everything is intertwined. So, what do I mean by this? Today, you know, infrastructure training, you know, spearheads AI. It's about who has the best model. It's about who can go to AGI, like artificial general intelligence or like artificial super intelligence. But so let's just say it's a search for the singularity. Right? Singularity being like the model is so good that it improves itself, type of thing. So training, you know, essentially is pulling everybody with their own essentially needs, right? And one of these needs is, again, more is better. More is better. So more power. So at one point it was the square meters that were the limiting factor. Because in the end, you know, if you run out of space, somebody has to build the space, right? And at some point, we had too much space, but not enough power, because these chips are terribly hungry of power. So you add more, now power becomes the limiting factor, which then makes, you know, power the premium of all of this, because somebody has to dig, you know, the trench and, you know, get you the wire and, you know, arguably,
and someone have to produce the power at some point.
So yes, and so right now, arguably, it's a lot harder to dig a trench and, you know, put a wire into the ground than it is to build a new, you know, a bigger, you know, warehouse. Right? It used to be that building a warehouse was out of the question.
Between the wire and the server, there is a lot of industrial stuff in the warehouse, which are very complicated, and we change a lot of the price of the square meter. Basically, you need to understand that a data center is priced by power by square meter. So, because if you have some power in the square meter, you will have to cool it because it will be warm. So if you add some power, you need to stabilize it. So it's a lot of industrial electricity stuff that basically make sure that the electricity you the tension and everything is very smooth. Because when you put a few hundreds millions of hardware in chips, you don't want that the electricity can kind of a spike and burn it.
Yeah. But there's a thing too. There are things that you described that are incremental, meaning, all right, we need, let's say, more coolers, more power stabilizers, right? But this is incremental, right? You do what you used to do, only you do it, you know, with slightly more scale or maybe even bigger scale. But, you know, that exists into a realm. At some point, you hit the limit. One instance, for instance, I was, you know, told about was that So, you know, data centers have to have, you know, power generators in case of power failure, right? So they have diesel generators. But at some, you know, scale of wattage, right, the amount of fuel you need to have on site, you know, makes the data center, let's say, a sensitive, you know.
Yeah, because it's a lot of fuel.
It's a lot of fuel at the same, you know, at the same spot.
To run it.
And so at some point, so it may be a legal limit. It may be a physical limit, but at some point you reach the limit, and then it's not like do it a slightly bit more, like more expensive. It becomes, you know, you have to recurse into a whole new realm, right?
And more many such cases. And another point is all this industrial stuff we build in the data center to be able to manage a hundred kVA, for example, per rack. If we use only 50 kVA, the industrial stuff we are producing and make to be able to consume 100 kVA is still there. So it makes the kVA way more expensive.
And by the way, that is, all of these discussions assumes that we have power available. At some point, you hit another limit, which is somebody needs to produce it, that power, right? We need to transfer it, but we also need to produce it. And then when we hit the there's not enough power produced period, the only recourse is we'll need to build a nuclear reactor or something, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so at some point, you know, that's another, you know, set of problems altogether. But so this is, by the way, this is, you know, training. Training is incentivized to consume more, right? But inference is incentivized to consume less by design.
So I think for this week, we have explained the difference of calculation between inference and training.
Hopefully, people will get it.
And so next week, we will talk about the different possibilities of the future of inference we have ahead of us. And maybe people will at least understand what does ZDML and why it's an important industrial assets of...
Hopefully, I'm working.
We're working on. So thank you very much for following us. This is Opening Voices, and we will continue this discussion next week.
Next week.
Thank you for listening to Opening Voices. The conversation between Quentin Adam and Steve Morin will continue in a few days. So follow us and subscribe not to miss our next episode.